And this is KPCW. It's 8:06 on this Thursday morning, August 28th. Currently 52 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly cloudy skies. We've got 55 degrees in the Heber Valley, also under cloudy skies. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your Wasatch Back forecast on this Thursday. As we go throughout the day, we're going to be looking at partly cloudy skies. We will keep a chance of scattered showers and storms in the area as we go throughout the day, but not nearly the coverage and intensity as what we saw on our Wednesday afternoon. High temperatures will climb into the lower 70s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid to upper 70s in the Heber Valley. Also, with the wind flow coming in as we go throughout the afternoon, be aware of a little bit of smokiness in the skies in the Park City area as we go throughout this afternoon. As we go into your Friday, we're looking at, again, partly cloudy skies. Could still keep an isolated pop-up storm or two along the Wasatch Back with highs in the mid-70s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 70s near 80 degrees as we get towards the Heber Valley. Again, watch out for a little bit of smokiness in the sky, but overall, it should not be too thick out there. Your weekend forecast is looking fantastic. Of course, it's a holiday weekend forecast there with Labor Day coming up on Monday. So for your Labor Day weekend, Saturday will feature lots of sunshine. Highs will climb into the mid-70s. In Park City, we'll see those highs climbing into the lower 80s in the Heber Valley. Your Sunday will feature mostly sunny skies once again with high temperatures nearing 80 degrees in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. Once we get to your Labor Day itself, Labor Day is looking sunny out there with temperatures climbing into the lower 80s. For us in Park City, we'll see those highs climbing into the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. As we get into Tuesday into Wednesday, we're going to be looking at a little bit of extra moisture trying to sneak in. So we'll call it partly sunny to partly cloudy skies. High temperatures on your Tuesday around 80 in Park City. We'll see highs in the mid-80s for you in the Heber Valley. And by the time we get towards your Wednesday, we'll have to introduce at least a chance of an isolated shower and storm in the forecast once again with high temperatures around 80 degrees for Park City, and we'll see those highs in the mid-80s for the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back from ABC 4 Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And on the phone with us with Mountain Trails Foundation with our weekly trails report, it's Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy Thursday, Park City. We're going to start this report with Wasatch Trails Foundation reporting in that they have got Evo Salt Lake City. Salt Lake is hosting a free mountain bike film festival tonight. For information and more details, go to the wasatchtrails.org website. You can find pre-registration there as well. We've got Logan from the city is reporting in that we've got the Mid-Mountain Trailhead is closed for improvement. So that's the trailhead that's just upstream from the Montage and the Purple Bus roundabout. So if you're taking transit, taking the Purple Bus up to the Montage, you're going to just want to hit the Mid-Mountain Trail straight up from the roundabout. Don't bother going up into the trailhead area. It's going to be closed, and again, there's construction, so you just want to stay clear of that. This weekend, we do have the point-to-point mountain bike race starting in Round Valley at 7 a.m., and there will be rolling trail impacts throughout the day. For information on that, you can go to the Mountain Trails website or the point-to-point website. They will have approximate times for trail impacts throughout the Saturday morning and afternoon. We do have Lower Loose Moose below Jenny's five-way. A five-way intersection is closed for maintenance. So please, if you're descending in that area, just go ahead and use Jenny's to lower CMG. Stay out of the way. Lower Loose Moose is just, like I said, it's going to be a bit of a disaster zone right now. And last, we've got the Tour de Suds. It's the 41st annual Tour de Suds mountain bike race party on bikes. I'm not sure most people don't take it as a race, so come out, have some fun. We are almost sold out. This race does sell out every year, so you want to get in on the fun. You need to go ahead and register in the next couple of days. We will sell this out. So anyway, that's it. We look forward to seeing you out there. Enjoy the tacky trails. Are in great condition with all this moisture. We're going to it's going to be an amazing weekend. So yeah. We'll hope to see you out there.
Real quick, a question on the Lower Loose Moose closure. Any idea how long that might take to repair?
I wish I could give you an answer to that. No, we don't. It's kind of a, we're working with the resort on that, and there is, until further notice.
Okay.
Well, hopefully next week we'll be reporting. Go ahead.
Called it a bit of a disaster. Is that just due to the dry trails?
Yeah, the trails are have been really dry, as everybody knows. That's but when I say disaster, I guess I mean that's maybe overstating. It's just, there is maintenance going on there. So, yeah.
Okay.
They're clear.
Okay. Laura, thanks.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Leslie.
Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Park City Councilmember Jeremy Rubel. Two council meetings to recap this week. Protect Summit County Representative Angela Moschetto discusses what's next now that a court ruling this week rendered the referendum, the citizens' referendum, moot. And Paralympian and founder of Sisters in Sports Foundation, Danielle Umstead, along with athlete Miranda Ritter, with details about their upcoming fundraiser September 4th. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include author Rebecca Dubrow, talking about her new book, Atomic Dreams, explaining why the conversation around nuclear power is changing. Then a conversation with Jeff Merrifield, a former commissioner at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, about new nuclear technologies as well as the future of power generation. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, heard, of course, every Thursday from 9 to 10. The Park City Council held two meetings this week. On Monday, the council held a work session on the Bonanza Park 5 acres. Then it met again on Tuesday to discuss the possible rezone of 70 acres in the Bonanza Park mixed-use district, contract for the senior center, water rates, and city manager recruitment, as well as pickleball. In the studio with a recap on some of those items is council member Jeremy Rubel. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning. I think the best thing about a Tuesday meeting is we get to be on the radio together again. It's nice to see you.
Thank you. Let's see, on Monday, you showed an appetite for more underground parking there at the 5-acre site and asked to get a cost estimate for a 2-story underground parking garage. Explain that, why we would need more parking if we're now talking about perhaps a lower density development without the Kimball Arts Center being there, and it's a locals gathering spot, so hopefully people are walking or riding their bikes?
Sure, that's more around the concept of a centralized shared parking garage, similar to what we have with China Bridge in the Old Town Main Street area here, and how we can serve that district. So as we look at the bigger picture and what we talked about Tuesday night with the potential rezoning of it that we continued, as we sharpen that pencil, one of the levers we have to relieve some of the pressures of development are the parking requirements, and it could also help us preserve the open space, which was important to the council. So if that 5-acre site is a good site to put one of those centralized parking garages, collect cars, the proposal that came in Monday had a pretty strong transit presence to it. So it could be like, a little hub and spoke model to connect to the rest of the city. Perhaps there's another location in the Bonanza District to do another one of those on the other end of it, and then not have every individual development require tons of surface parking. It'd probably be a win for the community.
Yeah. Any concerns, though, about the impact to an already overrun Bonanza Drive?
Yeah, absolutely. And this would actually be a strategy to help with that impact. So versus having it more dispersed, where you're having more cars moving around, you're impacting more intersections, this would really centralize the impacts, and then we could address those intersections and we can address that traffic in a more pointed manner.
Yeah. And as you know, we've also got the Holiday Park, the HOPA development, kitty corner from the Bonanza 5 acres. We also have a mixed-use development application from Ed Lewis, basically where Tupelo or the former ski team offices were. So what does that say? I mean, with all of this other density coming into play, I mean, it's going to make it even worse, no?
One would think, absolutely, and that's why the strategy here is so important. The council has stressed over and over the need to address those intersections and the need to address the traffic in the area. And also has acknowledged the community feedback that we're not looking for high-density development through that Bonanza Park neighborhood as it's rezoned, which is one of the reasons we continued it, to make sure we're hitting that mark right. So, yeah, all those things are on the radar, absolutely agree, and they need to be considered.
Yeah. So what do you hope to get out of the next session with Brinshore, which is scheduled for a week from tomorrow?
So we don't quite have the playbook yet of what that one's about. They said they had a three-step process to help them understand the vision for the 5 acres and then come back with something that's a little closer to what we're looking for, rather than, you know, out of the RFP, it was really who's a viable partner to work together with on developing the parcel. Now it's what's the vision for the parcel and coming up with those concepts.
So let's talk a little bit about what we are looking for and what's envisioned there. All along, residents have asked for a locals gathering spot, a mixed-use development, housing, commercial. But we're also hearing now boutique hotels. Why would we put a hotel in this development?
I don't believe a boutique hotel is considered for the 5-acre parcel. There was discussion of boutique hotels within the Bonanza Park rezone, and that was one of the things that we asked staff to come back with a little more information on what the right answer there would be, what do we have today, and moving forward. Really, it's a bigger picture conversation around transient uses versus a local neighborhood. But there's a middle ground here where those play together and complement each other nicely for various reasons, and that's why one of the reasons that was continued.
There was a comment by a council member that uses could include stuff from Kimball Junction's New Park and Redstone. So what are we talking about here? Restaurants, nail salons, yoga center?
Specifically on the 5 acres?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the idea, I don't recall the exact comment and its context, is that we would have this community gathering space that would be mixed use, and there would be things there that people want to do, right? Maybe they want to grab a coffee. Maybe they want to grab a quick bite to eat. Maybe there's some light recreation offerings. There's music. There's, you know, a potential for a stage with a small community theater, those kinds of things. And really, we're not at the this is what it's going to look like stage. We're at the what are the ideas, and collaborating with the partner we selected, Brinshore, to come up with some concepts and then keep sharpening that pencil.
And why include the 5 acres in the 70-acre rezone now that we're talking about a less dense development?
Well, because perhaps it's universal, right? Perhaps that's just one of the big anchors and the first example of what that new zoning is going to be allowing. They're not necessarily exclusive. They could be very complementary to each other.
All right. And there was a discussion. I'm going to jump to Tuesday's meeting, a discussion with regard to the rezone. Sure. What still needs to be worked out there?
Sure. So some of the things we talked about, a lot of discussion around the intersection impacts, the density, impacts on existing landowners. Some of the plans had pathways using right-of-way but still impacting private property. There was some discussion around the bonus categories that would allow for things like a fourth story, and if a fourth story was something we wanted to do universally, or if it was something that could be sort of sprinkled in and limited in how it's implemented. We talked about that shared parking strategy, said want to think more about the open space. Most of the council was not in favor of reducing the open space requirement, which was a discussion in a previous council meeting. I think those are probably the major ones. Oh, there's a little bit around the Iron Horse property that the city occupies for transit and public works, and what the future of that could look like, and maybe we should have a little better clarity before we plan around it, so to speak.
Yeah, so how does the code ensure that we don't have a bunch of hotels developed in that 70 acres?
Well, that's that whole transient use conversation, and it's one of the things that'll be coming back next time. Basically answering the question, is what's presented currently the right answer, or do we want it to be more restrictive? The overarching concept here is, do we need to really give away so much up front, or should we just open up the faucet a little bit, do some things to incentivize redevelopment in a low density, very controlled type manner, revitalizing the area, and then if it doesn't work and it's not responsive with the market, you could always open up that faucet a little more, but let's be careful about, you know, turning it too hard up front here.
Yeah. So under what's being proposed with this rezone, would the Yarrow redevelopment plans that have been presented, would those have been allowed under what's being proposed today?
We haven't talked about that in a while, so I want to make sure I'm accurate. Based on the original plans, we did receive feedback probably 6 or 8 months ago that the answer to that was no. The rezone strategy has changed since then, and I don't have a good answer for you if the current version of it would allow that or not.
All right. And then looking back at the 5 acres with the loss of the Kimball Arts Center now, you showed an interest in learning more about having business incubators on that site. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because later on Tuesday, the council did discuss some potential economic development grants.
Yeah, it's a very related conversation. It's a program we used to have that we haven't in 2 or 3 years. And in the staff report on Tuesday, we saw a list of the businesses that came through that program when it existed. And I'll tell you, you look at that list and it's like, oh, I love that place. I love that place. Well, that's cool. That's a local business that's now hyper successful and still in the community, most of them. So it's really, you know, in the context of this community gathering space, what can we do to not only promote a place people want to come hang out and talk to their neighbors, but also a place where we can really spark some local business and have that happening again.
Yeah, and two that came to mind were Shred and Soul Poles that were given these economic, I mean, I'm thinking like 50 grand. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, I think the numbers were a little smaller, and there's a lot of rules around it and the viability, so it's not just giving away money for no reason. We asked staff to come back with some creative strategies. Maybe it's a no-interest loan, or maybe it's, you know, you have to be in business a certain amount of time before it's forgiven, those kinds of things. But it's a great example. I still ski with Soul Poles. And when you're on the lift, people still say, oh, Soul Poles, how cool is that? That's from Park City. Those are the kinds of things, you know, our community loves that, and we want to support everything we can in the space.
So assuming that the new zone does get approved here soon, how soon do you expect to see any new development?
That's TBD. We're told there's nothing necessarily in the hopper. So, you know, we want to get it right, and that's why it's hard to hit the right mark. So we're saying let's start smaller potentially, and then, again, open up that faucet if it doesn't work. But we're not trying to slam a ton of development into the Bonanza area. What we're trying to do is really revitalize it as the center of town, at least geographically.
Okay. You also discussed the changes to the water rates. What are you hearing from residents about the new residential and irrigation water fees?
Mixed reviews. We heard from some people that it did as intended, which the policy goal there was not to have folks be in penalty water pricing for using the amount of water they need to maintain their property. So we shifted from a flat kind of, you know, over X amount of water as a penalty to a water budget approach where each property is assigned a certain amount of water that reflects conservation measures based on state benchmarks. So for folks who were under that number, they saw reductions in their bills. For folks who were over it, they saw a pretty high impact. And then the question became, was that really the intent of the policy, or do we need to play with some of these variables a bit to fit our community? And that's where the council was supportive of, we hear the community, we understand, and perhaps we need to refine the approach here a bit.
All right. But that's the whole idea. It's not to drive revenue. It's to encourage conservation.
It's to encourage conservation, and it's actually to lower water costs to our community. So, you know, when we heard stories about folks' bills going up certain multiples, not the intent, and that's why the council recognized it and called it up. Our water department, same. They've brought it to our attention with a number of different scenarios and ideas on how we can shape this policy to hit our goal a little better without raising water costs for folks who are not abusing water. And they're going to come back, I think, next week or the week after with those suggestions. Also with a question to council, if we want to apply those suggestions back to when these rates changed July 1st, so folks could potentially see a bill credit for those bills they received that did not necessarily meet the policy goal.
All right. Separately, the council's considering changes to the water impact fees. How come?
Yeah, this is something that happens every few years. There's supposed to be a study to assess, you know, when a business or, well, let's say business or residential, but new development happens and what the impact on the water system is from that new development. And they're assessed a fee as such. We deferred raising those fees until we really get further down the path of the water rate conversation. One of the things that really drives our water rates and also reflected in our water impact fees as proposed is the infrastructure required to treat our mining water coming out of the tunnels on the mountain where we get it. And are there other ways that we can address the cost of some of that treatment to spread it around. You know, we have a tourism-based economy. We have a lot of tax revenue from that side. And then it would come out of the calculation that we need to recover from water rates and water impact fees, potentially. So we deferred that. I'm sure we'll be talking about it again in the next week or two when we revisit the rates.
All right, council also moving forward with drafting a ground lease for the new pickleball facility near Park City Hospital. One of the pros, I guess, of doing a public-private partnership for this project, and the cons.
Sure. So pros really are we have the land. It's sitting there. And the private entity then takes the risk and the cost and the project management and all that around building the facility and operating the facility. Another pro of it, you know, you could call it a pro or a con. We essentially have a little bit less control, but we could build it into the agreement on the partnership. An example there is the provider, it's the Pickler is the name of it. They've agreed that our local residents would have a discount from their regular subscription rate. And they also agreed in the meeting Tuesday, which is great to hear, that they could do something around court priority for our local residents. So, you know, if we can shape this right, it's really a win-win for everybody.
All right. We're talking about indoor court for 12 courts. What's the soonest this could open?
TBD, we're moving as fast as we can. You know, I don't want to make a promise that we can't deliver to yet. I think we'll know more here in the next month or two.
All right. Council also moved forward with the design contract for the new senior center there on the Mowinney parking lot. So are we talking about the entire parking lot going away as well as that kind of that park next to it?
Hopefully not. That's one of the things that's a little TBD there too. And we had a discussion, you know, initially they were going to come back early next year with some concept options. You know, what do we want to do? Where do we want to site the building? Should the parking be underground or surface? We discussed coming back a lot sooner, potentially in the next month or two, and asking us, what are these big questions that we could really narrow our focus on this project? You know, personally, I'd like to preserve the park. I don't know where the whole council stands on that, but I'd like to have that discussion, you know, now rather than 6 months from now so that our concept designs follow whatever the strategy of the council is that's published.
And does the city need to talk about funding the project with Summit County?
Ideally, yeah, it's something that we would talk about together. Senior services are something that's provided by the county and in other parts of the area here, and it's exciting to be able to partner together on it.
Yeah, at one point they were talking, the council sounded like it was the seniors needed to make up any shortfall. Are you still looking for the seniors to pay for this?
I think the simple answer there is no, from a, you know, high-level perspective, that we recognize this is a government service, and it's something that between the seniors, Park City, and Summit County, we should come up with a solution for.
And with the announcement of Park City Manager Matt Dias leaving next month, what's the process going to be to replace him?
Yeah, we did talk a little bit about that. There's a whole recruitment that'll happen. We are going to use an external search firm for such an important position. We, as a council, asked staff to accelerate the process as much as we could with still getting it right. And if there's a potential to sort of narrow the pool of applicants before the new council gets seated, that we'd like to do it just to keep it moving, but that the new council would ultimately be making the decision on the future city manager.
Is that a council decision or the mayor's decision?
How the process runs?
No, who gets selected as city manager?
I believe it's the mayor with the advice and consent of the council.
Okay, so council would need to weigh in.
Yes.
All right, anything else quickly you wanted to mention?
That's a lot. No, that's probably good for today. Thanks for the time.
Yep, you too. Thank you. That's Park City City Council Member Jeremy Rubel. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, as we reported on Tuesday, 3rd District Court Judge Richard Morozik denied Protect Summit County's motion for summary judgment, saying that the case is moot because a new law, Senate Bill 26, supersedes Ordinance 987, which was approved by the Summit County Council late last year. In the studio to explain what's next is one of the representatives from Protect Summit County, Angela Muscata. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So maybe briefly explain what the court ruling this week means for the citizen referendum.
Thanks for asking me to. It's super complicated, so hopefully this makes sense. Technically, Judge Mrazek did not rule the referendum moot. What we did is we petitioned for summary judgment. And in layman's terms, that's basically saying, can we get a quick decision here? We're fighting the clock. We would like to avoid a trial. Can you just kind of consider this and give us a ruling? And what Mrazek ultimately did is said, if you want a quick ruling, this petition for summary judgment, I can't give you that. And it is because of he's now saying mootness, that there's been a change in circumstances, and that is SB 26 essentially provides the same zoning and same thing that Ordinance 987 does. So that's why he's saying no to summary judgment. But the case technically remains open. And so from our position, it doesn't resolve the issue of 987.
So I guess, where does this then leave your group's challenge to allow residents and not the state legislature to have a say and a vote on the future development of Dakota Pacific?
Another great question. For us, this really isn't about winning or losing at this point. I know so many people in Summit County would love to see some sort of decisive victory in court where the judge rules and says, you know, your packets are reinstated and all these signatures count, and everybody has an opportunity to vote on the ballot. But really, at this point, whether it's through ballot referendum or it's through action of the county, repealing Ordinance 987 is all we want in order that we can proceed to the next step and look at SB 26.
Okay, and this is where I think the confusing part comes into it. You have said that Summit County could have resolved the matter weeks ago when you asked them to stipulate that Ordinance 987 has no force and effect. Why would repealing 987 help? I mean, your citizen referendum depends on the force and effect of Ordinance 987. Without it, what would citizens be voting for or against?
But that's exactly it, right? We don't want to have to spend all this money. We don't need to go to court for a Pyrrhic victory. And this is exactly why courts rule in instances like this. If you read the ruling from Mrazek, it says that there's no need to go forward just to review what is essentially now an academic decision. And that's why we say it's not about winning or losing. The losers right now are taxpayers on both sides of this, who are paying exorbitant county legal bills because they've retained outside counsel, and who are supporting us in our legal effort to stay in this fight. So the reason we asked weeks ago, right, was just end this. If you say that, and this is where the county actually came back in their first brief in response to us with pages and pages dedicated to arguing mootness. And we said, if that's the case, then please just stipulate to an order in writing, okay, and we will walk away from all of this right now. But they wouldn't.
So if, in fact, they do repeal 987, I mean, what are you then, what is Protect Summit County then fighting for?
This is, so ever since SB 26 was introduced, we've had two hurdles to clear, okay? We have two matters of legislative intervention to overcome. The first happened in December when everybody said at that meeting they'd been pressured. You know, if they didn't pass Ordinance 987, then worse things would happen. So they did. And that was the first fight that we took up by way of petition for this referendum to get on the ballot. And then SB 26 was adopted in March. And so that is the second hurdle that we will have to clear.
So the opportunity for getting the Dakota Pacific real estate development before the voters isn't going to happen.
It depends. Honestly, at this point, we would like to avoid the additional steps and expense it would take to get there. We are asking the county right now to do what they did last week, which is consider Ordinance 987A, which would repeal 987 and take it off the books. If they do that in timely fashion, then we can save ourselves the additional expense and headache of an interlocutory appeal.
So that happens, then what? You put your attentions towards Senate Bill 26?
Exactly.
Does Mrazek's ruling set any kind of precedence that could affect future citizen-led referendums?
Oh, geez, you want me to put on my Elle Woods or Aaron Brockovich hats here? I don't know. I'm not a legal expert. Mrazek ruled using other precedent established earlier this month in a related case, right? But again, what he says is it's about a change in circumstances. His ruling had nothing to do with packets. It did not provide any of the guidance that some of the counselors were hoping they would get when they decided to not adopt 987A last week.
So I guess, what do you think this decision, all that's gone on, I guess, says about the role of citizen input in large-scale development projects?
The role of citizen input, I mean, that is a hotly debated topic here in Utah, and they keep threatening to take it away. I absolutely support property rights, as I think many people do in this state. Where I personally struggle, and I think the big struggle on Dakota Pacific, is that this company bought parcels that were entitled very specifically for certain uses and decided early on that that didn't matter because they had friends in high places who they named to people like me and thought that, again, legislative intervention would ultimately get them what they want, and it has, if they couldn't get it through regular channels and regular process.
So I guess bottom line is there a path forward to put this project, Dakota Pacific's project, to a public vote?
No. And again, I say, well, I mean, I shouldn't say there's not a path forward. If the county fails to repeal 987, that will put us in the position of within the next 21 days having to file this interlocutory appeal. And the reason that is rushed is because, again, this case is still open. Mrazek's decision on our limited ask for our petition for summary judgment doesn't resolve the case. The case itself is still open. We would really not have to, we would prefer not to have to go through an expensive appeal and an expensive trial, right? We would like the county to just end this part of it right now and allow us to move on.
So in terms of perhaps taking on Senate Bill 26 and getting that to the courts and possibly overturned, what's the reality of that?
It's going to be a challenge, but, you know, look around the state. There are successful constitutional challenges. Summit County is very much, I think most of Summit County, celebrating the ruling with respect to better boundaries. Now, whether or not that has practical effect is a different story. But the Supreme Court of Utah has in recent years recognized and honored the rights of voters as supreme, even to the legislature.
Yeah. So do you plan, I mean, you being Protect Summit County, plan to introduce any new ballot initiatives or organize future referenda?
No. I mean, not at this stage. I don't think there's anything. This is a Herculean effort in and of itself. This is more than enough for one group to focus on. And I mean, you know, look at all of the groups that have come before. People have been carrying this for years. You have initial petitioners, you had Stop Dakota Pacific, you have Friends for Responsible Development, now it's Protect Summit County, and who knows if there may be a different group in the future.
Yeah, and in terms of fighting this, you're just saying, give us some relief here, rescind, repeal your legal bills. What are they up to?
They're well over $100,000 at this point. Our GoFundMe is set for way less than that because we don't really feel that it's right to put this entire burden on the backs of everyday people in Summit County who came out and supported the petition, who helped us with printing costs. And so, you know, we are talking to people of different means behind the scenes to help us get the lion's share of the bills paid.
So you're pretty optimistic about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have established a political issues committee in order to stay compliant.
So at the same time, Summit County taxpayers have been paying for the bills to fight the whole referendum issue.
Yes. And, you know, County Attorney Margaret Olson said in last week's meeting when Candace Hart was really on the right track. You know, he said, why don't we just basically stop the bleed of taxpayer money here? Stop wasting it. And County Attorney Margaret Olson interjected to say, well, we are the defendants, right? We have to pay for this. And to a certain degree, maybe, was outside counsel required? I mean, we have two sets of attorneys here. We have the county attorneys and the clerk's attorneys. And was it necessary to keep this going? There have been multiple off-ramps on what I am now kind of jokingly referring to as the highway to legal bill hell. But, you know, and there's lots that the community doesn't doesn't know about. But prior to Clerk First declaring the petition insufficient, our attorneys and Dana Williams and Sean Stinson, the two signature gatherers featured in the infamous photos, went and met with the clerk, you know, to just explain, hey, we did this in good faith, and the pages that were pulled out were right here next to the packet. And that was an opportunity to just say, you know what, I acknowledge, which they spent dozens of pages, again, arguing in expensive legal briefs. We acknowledge SB 26 is happening. That renders this whole thing moot from our perspective. So yeah, you know, big deal, get on the ballot. But she refused. And so we ended up having to file, well, threaten a temporary restraining order. That was expensive. We then agreed to a mutually stipulated order that Eve would count the packets and provisionally put the signatures on the Lieutenant Governor's website. Then we had to follow through with lawsuit. And then there was this opportunity after the first round of briefs to stipulate to an order again. And every off-ramp, Clerk First has refused. And that's what has driven up the costs astronomically on both sides and unnecessarily. And I think that is really what taxpayers should be upset about at this point, taxpayers and voters.
I just want to know what the end of the story would have been, but we're never going to find out.
You know what, Leslie? The people of Summit County spoke. And for a clerk who says that it is her job to make sure that the will of the people is heard, we know what that will is. It has been crystal clear for months. It is crystal clear on account of the 6,000 plus people who came out to sign that petition. And if referendum killer Renee Cowley thinks that her 11-0 record is preserved, while we may not have an official decision in court, I think that there's at least an asterisk there now.
Anything else on this subject? Because I want to turn to the Court of Appeals scheduled to make a ruling today on the Vail Resorts lift case. Any comment prior to that decision coming
down? Absolutely none. It has nothing to do with Protect Summit County, and I think that really is the issue of the day. I encourage everybody who supported the petition to write into County Council and just ask them to please re-agendize 987A and please adopt that.
Okay. But at this point, that hasn't happened.
No, at this point, it has not happened. The next Summit County Council meeting is Wednesday. I think it's September 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing. Okay. Angela, anything else?
No.
Okay. Thanks for your
time.
Thank
you.
From Protect Summit County, one of the participants, Angela Moschetta. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Coming up on Saturday, September 6th, the Sisters in Sports Foundation hosting its annual fundraiser to benefit the nonprofit organization. In the studio with details, I have the founder and president of the Sisters in Sports Foundation, Danelle Umstead, along with one of the athletes the foundation supports, Miranda Ritter. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie, and good morning, beautiful Park City. I'm excited to be here.
Great. Well, glad to have you. So, Danelle, tell us what Sisters in Sports Foundation is and what it is that you do.
We are a foundation supporting women and girls with disabilities at the level of holistically them as where they are and who they are. We support our girls through mentorship. We support our girls through mental health and wellness. And we support our girls in roundtables, encouraging them to support each other and creating a community where every woman and girl with a disability feels seen and celebrated.
Okay, so how has your personal journey as a four-time Paralympic athlete shaped kind of the mission of the foundation?
Yes, I'm a four-time Paralympian, three-time Paralympic medalist, and your favorite blind girl in alpine ski racing. I have lived in Park City since 2006, and this is where my career is. And as an athlete and a disabled athlete, through my mission, my journey, I felt supported by my community, but beyond that, I didn't feel the support of other women and girls and other athletes, and I wanted to create this movement where we are all supported in all different ways, and having all the Olympians and Paralympians today showing up and supporting this movement is a beautiful thing.
All right. Well, Miranda, tell us a little bit about yourself.
what about myself?
Well, you're one of the recipients of Sisters in Sports because you've got a disability. Maybe you can just talk a little bit about that. You're in a wheelchair.
Yep, I have a genetic condition, and so I can't walk at all. I do sit skiing, and then I also do mountain biking in the summer.
Okay, so how has Sisters in Sports kind of benefited you?
I think the community aspect has been the most helpful part of Sisters in Sports, even in the kind of adaptive sports spaces. It's very male dominated. There's a lot of like male athletes, but not a whole lot of females. And so Sisters in Sports being a community entirely of female athletes has been like a really supportive community.
Yeah, so you are competing in alpine skiing? Is that, you said a sit ski?
I'm definitely at the beginning of my athletic journey, so I'm a lot less advanced than a lot of the other members of Sisters in Sports. I practice with the race team and hope to eventually ski in a race.
Okay. So you live here in the Wasatch Back?
Yep, I do.
Yeah. Danelle, let's talk a little bit about the Bella Notte. This is the fundraiser that's happening Saturday the 6th at Grand Hyatt Deer Valley.
Yes, we are so excited for this event. Again, Olympians like Peekaboo and Shannon Barkey will be our MC, and biggest story of the two sisters in sports on the Olympic side is the speed skaters, Erin Jackson and Brittany Bowe will be there supporting our event and really pushing the collaboration of women in sport. It'll be a really beautiful event where we are Milan Cortina themed because of the upcoming games and just the presence we have here locally for the upcoming 2034 games. We really want to show what Paralympic and community looks like in our county. So it's kind of like a movement and a celebration of all things, not just Sisters in Sports. So we will have a VIP event where Erin and Brittany Bowe will speak, and we'll have hors d'oeuvres, pin trading with the lanyards, just like the Olympic and Paralympic Games. And we'll have a great 10 of our athletes will be there, and storytelling, unbelievable donations. Michaela Schifrin donated her helmet that she wore when she broke and succeeded Stenmark's record. Like, it is unreal how the Olympians are and Paralympians are showing up for our girls and this movement.
Wonderful. So what can attendees expect from the evening?
A lot of fun, a lot of inspiration and movement, a lot of puppy love, because we do have a donated Cavalier King Charles puppy that will be there. And a lot of, you know, a lot of support for this movement that we are creating and seeing what that actually looks like.
Yeah. So tickets are how much?
General admission tickets are $250, and VIP tickets where you'll get the nicer wine and a little more intense experience one-on-one will be at $500, and that one starts at $630.
Okay. And how much are you hoping to raise?
You know, when I've done our previous events, they have been smaller and have been able to have a friends event to support us, and it's been $100,000 profit. We're hoping to double that.
Wow, that would be great. And then how do you divvy up the money, you know, between Miranda and those others that...
Yes, so we actually support our girls in so many different ways. We've hired a professional sports psychology team that has mental wellness, mental support, mental professionals that can provide them with the tools to succeed as an athlete, succeed as a woman in sport, and be a strong individual. So we put a lot of funding into that. We put a lot of funding and resources into all our programs that we provide for our girls. And then we also take the funding so they can get involved in the sports they love or support them financially in the ways they need it.
Yeah, and Miranda, did you ski before your diagnosis?
Yeah, I skied when I was a young kid growing up, mostly in Minnesota on tiny little icy hills. And so skiing out here has been both different in the way I do it and also a lot more fun in the terrain options and kind of snow quality and all of that.
Okay, so it was a sport that was near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then you say you also mountain bike?
I do.
How was that done?
So I use a mountain hand cycle. So you're kind of recumbent, and then you use a combination of your hands and kind of an e-assist motor to propel the bike. And we go on all the same tracks. That like we ride single track. We ride all sorts of the same trails that everybody else living up here in Park City probably rides. Usually one of my favorite places to ride is Deer Valley, but unfortunately they're doing a lot of construction this year.
Now you also have a looks like a service dog.
I do.
How does the dog help you?
Elvis can open doors and he can pick things up off the floor and he can turn on lights and he can do all sorts of cool stuff.
Elvis.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that beautiful?
Pretty smart. Yeah, pretty impressive. Yeah.
Miranda's condition causes her to dislocate quite often with just even opening a door. So, like, Elvis is really supporting her and her needs.
Wow. And maybe why he's the size he is.
But yes.
Is he a poodle?
He's a standard poodle. He's just a really big standard poodle.
Yeah. Got some strength behind him. Danelle, maybe we've got another minute here. Can you share maybe a success story or an impact moment from the foundation and how you've helped? I mean, that kind of stands out for you?
Yeah, there's so many success stories of all our girls, and one doesn't stand out from another, but the impact we're making and the community we're creating for these girls to have each other and feel supported by others is really impacting my heart. A lot of our girls that are coming to the event and beyond are very close to making the 2026 Paralympic Games, and I agree they probably will make those games. I just don't want to put that pressure on them. But that's really beautiful to see that, you know, from the beginning they didn't have what the support that they felt they needed, or I felt they needed, really, to be honest, and to watch them grow as women, strong women, and give them the support they need and be thanked for that is the part that really just makes my heart smile.
Okay, so have you qualified for the 2026 games?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm retired, friend. You know that. I wish. I mean, like, Italy? Come on. Like, who doesn't want to go to Italy? My last game was actually Korea. Oh, no, China. So I'm done, and now I want to focus my energy on supporting these girls, creating this movement, and really just empowering others to see themselves as where they are and who they are, and just really empower them.
Okay. Well, good luck, Danelle. And Miranda, thanks for stopping by as well, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Again, the fundraisers for Sisters in Sports Foundation coming up Saturday, September 6th at the Grand Hyatt. You can find out more by going online to sistersinsportsfoundation.org. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.
On Tuesday, the Park City Council entered an agreement with Wadsworth Development Group to pursue a new indoor pickleball facility on roughly 3 acres of land near the Park City Hospital. As the public-private partnership is currently proposed, the 35,000-square-foot facility would include 12 indoor courts. The Pickler, which operates numerous pickleball facilities in Utah and around the country, would run the new Park City space under the contract. The city's attorney's office and the developer will now draft details of a ground lease over the next 90 days. Pickleball consistently ranks as the fastest-growing sport in the U.S. The Park City Council moved to create a new facility last year after hearing from numerous local pickleballers about a lack of indoor courts during the winter. The city's recreation department previously attempted to set up temporary courts at the Utah Film Studio, but the playing environment was not up to standard. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, a new hiking and biking trail sharing Park City's mining history will open next year. Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History announced this week It had received several grants to build the historic mine route. The 7.8-mile loop will connect existing trails and iconic buildings from Park City's rich silver mining history. The trail will include 11 interpretive signs, but the best way to experience the historic area will be through a GPS-enabled mobile app called Travel Story GPS. The app will guide users through the route while sharing 25 narratives and historic photos. The route will start and end at the Park City Museum on Main Street. The outbound route will use the Treasure Hill Trail system and head toward the Silver King Coalition Mine Complex at the base of the Bonanza Chairlift on Park City Mountain. The 31-acre site is now listed on the National Register of Historic Places. From there, the route loops onto a new connector trail to Empire Canyon, where the Alliance Watchman's Cabin and the Judge Mine Office Building are. The trail returns to town via the Ontario Bench Road and Prospect Trails. The Mining History Group says the loop will take about 3.5 hours to complete. Hikers can shorten the journey by taking the town lift to the Silver King Complex, bypassing some 3 miles and over 1,000 vertical feet of uphill climb. The historic mine route, again, set to open Miners' Day of 2026.